Well, I guess it's true of the news in general. A lot of people would say that there's never any good news. It's a truism. But in the business media in particular, you know, except for some business congratulatory magazines, perhaps, there has been an overwhelming amount of negative news, some of it well-deserved. So I don't want to suggest that this shouldn't tell the story of Enron, or that there was nothing wrong at Lehman Brothers, or that the recession didn't happen. But it seems that there is a kind of overwhelming negative, and that means that the positive never gets the attraction that it deserves.
You've written about, you have produced a documentary now about doing virtuous business. Virtuous business, which you say relies on ancient virtues in a modern world.
Yeah, so how classic that something old could be new, or that something old could be good, or even fashionable again. And that's the response I'm getting, that thoughts as old as Aristotle, or even older, and thoughts that are present actually in every spiritual tradition known to human beings, which are more than a few thousand years old, might have practical wisdom for management. It sounds like a novel, even a kind of curious idea, but it happens to be the case, and sometimes you have to take a step backwards to go two steps forward.
Virtues such as compassion, as honesty, as dealing with people fairly?
Well, all of those, and just the discussion of virtue actually is the right track. In philosophy, this is called virtue ethics. So it's different from a different school of ethics that, you know, would look at duty or responsibility. So this then looks at those parts of character that are formed in the human person, that congeal when people come together to attempt any kind of activity. It could be personal action. It could be action in groups and voluntary associations and churches, obviously in something called the polis and in politics. But I think very relevantly, it also has to do with corporate life. Corporations are, after all, whether it's cemetery societies or universities, whether it's for business, profit, or not-for-profit, are really the way we organize ourselves in this latter part of the 20th and now 21st century.
Is it as simple as saying you do good? You do good things?
It is. You know, that's the tradition in philosophy is a eudaimonic one, which means it has to do with human happiness and the good life, and how is the good life lived? So it's a deeply personal question. It's obviously one that has to do with culture. And in our culture presently, corporations play a large part of that culture, not just internally, because each company has its own corporate culture, but so too in the way that capitalism itself is formed. And I would say that's an evolutionary thing.
This work, whether you're General Motors or DuPont or SIDS, filling station?
Indeed. So what I'm talking about here is true for mom and pop, for the small and medium-sized enterprises, which are, of course, very important to our economy where jobs are being created, and also for the large Fortune 1000 companies. So I think that this is a kind of universal conversation. Whether, you know, it can be more easily done in a small company or a large one, a public one or a private one, in one industry as opposed to another, in a for-profit as to a not-for-profit. All very interesting research questions, but highly relevant.
You write about spiritual capital. Spiritual capital, we know what capital is. We know what a business wants capital. What is spiritual capital?
Spiritual capital is something that I've become associated with, and therefore have to defend, it seems.
Defend it?
Well, articulate it in some ways. I would frame it this way. Robert Putnam, who is a very, very well-known, some people would say the most famous social scientist of our time at Harvard, has written about social capital. You know, the fund of knowledge, the fund of connections that come together in networks that give rise in, you know, any society, in any community for that matter. He's written more recently, this book has just come out, about something that he calls spiritual capital, that I call spiritual capital, His book is entitled American Grace, to plug his book, his new book. But spiritual capital would be that part of social capital that emanates from some kind of religious or spiritual tradition. I'm not naming a particular one, and obviously in North America there have been, you know, Christians, Jews, and Muslims all forming various forms of cultures, giving rise to all kinds of organizations. But if you look back over the long spans, look at all the things that have been formed in that framework. Most of the universities, many of the hospitals, many of the associations, all kinds of voluntary activities, you name it. So, too, it has been the case that various companies have been formed growing out of or based on some of the virtues of those traditions.
Can you be a successful company for a long period of time if you're bankrupt of spiritual capital?
Well, there are all kinds of conditions that have to do about the durability of corporations, most of which have to do with serving the customers. But you could argue that those companies that take seriously the values, and in many instances they start with a kind of spiritual value, have a special condition in the economy that they tend to do better. They are oriented not just solely at profit, which is an interesting kind of point. And they, if you look at them over a long period of time, tend to last longer. So it leads to a bunch of curious research questions about why that could be, how they got formed, which virtues are most evident. And then, indeed, to your question, if we're not producing those kinds of spiritual values or virtues any longer, what will the companies be like that we, in fact, invent and that enterprises start today?
In the documentary that you're screening while you're in Fayetteville doing virtuous business, you highlight about a dozen companies and leaders of those companies.
There are actually 14 companies in the PBS documentary, we argue in the case of these 14 companies, there are different vignettes featuring each company and most of them at the CEO level, that there are 14 different virtues that no one company, like no one human being, is perfectly virtuous, but that they give evidence of different virtues, that they exhibit them well. So we look at those in some detail in the film. The vignettes are short. You know, you're constrained by television time, 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, and we try to explain powerfully and visually, and then we interview all these CEOs, what makes those companies tick.
You've written a book about thrift,
mm-hmm.
and how that is perhaps a value that maybe the country doesn't have as much as we or it used to.
Yeah, I wrote a book just before the financial crisis, and then the book came out right in the recession, so I jokingly say I timed it. Either I timed it perfectly or I caused the condition. But the subtitle of the book is Rebirth of a Forgotten Virtue. So I think in the case of thrift, which I would argue is a secondary virtue, an important one, and one that we have disregarded, it in large part came to have pejorative meaning, you know, a thrifty cheapskate or, you know, cheap bastard, whatever, that in the recession, we have more or less come back to the virtue of frugality and said that either a simpler life or a life that has more meaning or a set of practices that are more thrifty. Actually, the word thrift and thriving are from the same root, Old Norse verb, so maybe they have to do something with each other. I think that thrift has become, again, quote, the in thing.
It would seem like it would be hard to find someone to disagree that being virtuous is not that it would seem like you would have many subscribers. Yes, it pays to be virtuous. And I mean that both literally and figuratively. Mm. You'd be hard to find someone who argues against virtue, I guess, is what I'm saying.
You do find hardened people who I'm not saying they defend vice, which would be the opposite of virtue, but they would say they would be dismissive of the virtues. And that could take one or two or three different forms. People could be cynical, for instance. Mm-hmm. People could be skeptical. Show me the evidence. Other people could say, and I think they would be correct in saying, that this is all very hard to practice, and therefore, because of human beings, failures or ineptitude or original sin in whatever category, that virtue is not irrelevant. It's just hard to do.
Hard to do to when you're balancing the books and trying to stay in business. Hard to do in that way.
Hard to do in every sense. That I'm thinking of BP as I'm looking at you. You could cut the corner and make an extra buck. You could not tell the whole truth all the time. You could maybe steal a little bit from your office, and nobody would ever really notice. And you add all that up, and it actually has economic consequence.
You're halfway through this tour of 26 different places. Do you find that the people that come see the movie, the people that come participate or listen to the panel discussions, are as optimistic as perhaps you are? I mean, these are not the most robust times.
Indeed. And I would say there are different kinds of audiences, and all across this country. Last week, I was at four cities and four business schools in Canada. So there are differences. I would say the MBA students that have seen the movie have been even inspired by it, because in many of their classes, they haven't heard all this, either because they're learning very specialized things, or they don't study business ethics, or they case studies that they read don't talk about these things. So they have been actually over the top about hearing some of this dialogue about virtue. People who are in business, again, large and small, all kinds of businesses, I think are also very pleased to see this movie and to have this discussion, because most of them are struggling, both individually and corporately, to be virtuous, to do good. And they're trying to work for and be in companies and in communities that exhibit some of those virtues. They're realistic people. I mean, sun shines and the rain comes down on all of them equally, and they have different approaches. But it's been very well received, and hopefully when it shows, which will be sometime around the first week of January on PBS to 150 stations nationally, 15 million people, there'll be a big national kind of conversation about the virtue of business.
And I was going to ask my last question, don't you think there should be a national conversation about virtue in business, in politics, in journalism?
I think it's timely. I mean, these are perennial and timeless questions. So if I'm in some way pushing that conversation forward, then it does, have ramifications that go beyond business and certainly go beyond any given state or any given country. And it has a spillover into certainly political life and cultural life. And maybe more conversation about virtue would be healthy.